Welcome to the latest episode of Culture of Perth and Kinross Jacobite Clan podcast. Throughout the series, we have talked about all different types of Jacobite topics relating to our Jacobite Clan's exhibition. And in these final two podcasts, with the exhibition closing on the 26th of October, we're dealing with the legacy of Jacobitism in Perth. Now, Nikki, correct me if I'm wrong, but today we're talking about somebody who doesn't actually feature in the exhibition.
We are. I'm sorry. I had to put someone in. In the last of our sessions, I wanted to get folks thinking about places they can visit and other things they can go and see which illustrate our Jacobite heritage in Perth and Kinross. So, and we've worked, like we've talked about, so many partners, and each week we've focused on their stories as well and also on the places they come from. We've talked about Castle Mingus at Wheam, Fingask on the Carse of Gowrie, Blair Athol, the castle and the village, Glentilt, all that area. Inner Perthy Library, when we've talked about the Drummonds, and of course it takes you to Drummond Castle Gardens near Crieff. So there's also the battle site itself at Killiecrankie. So there's loads of really important locations which we've been talking about, as well as stories. So I hope we've inspired people to see Perthshire differently and also to get out and about and see more once the exhibition's over.
Yeah, I have to agree there. October is an absolutely beautiful month for long walks and enjoying the fresh autumn weather, and the trees in Perthshire turning sort of golden orange colours. So getting out and about is to see more is such a good idea. So where are you suggesting that we go, and what type of people are we talking about seeing?
Well, the main character in this part of our Jacobite stories is a man called General George Wade. Wade was born in 1673. He's the son of a man called Jerome Wade of Westmeath in Ireland, and he was ostensibly a military man. He had his first military commission in 1690, and he saw military service in Flanders, Portugal and Spain between 1692 and around 1714. He was a brigadier general by 1708 and a major general by 1714, so he's a soldier. He's brave, he's diligent. And in 1715, he was actually sent to overawe a potential Jacobite force near Bath. So we're talking about Jacobitism down south here in England. He did so. He did very well, in fact. And apparently he uncovered a stash of weapons and loot or something in this case, and another. So he seemed to show an aptitude for counterinsurgency work was the real key here. So 2 years later, he also foiled another Jacobite attempt to secure weapons. So in 1722, Wade was actually elected as MP for Bath, and he was politically dominant there until his death. And this was partly due to people recalling his anti-Jacobite investigations. So all this work had, this early Jacobite stuff had an impact on his career overall.
So how did Wade end up coming to Scotland then?
Well, the threat of Jacobite uprisings, as you know from things that are happening in Bath there and all the rest of it, this activity is ongoing. And in 1724, he was sent to the Scottish Highlands. In a military capacity, really, to observe the strength and resources of the Highlanders. Wade found the district, as he called it, in a state of anarchy and confusion. He reported on blood feuds, blackmail, cattle rustling. It's just like the normal Scotland, but these were rife at the time, nothing new year. So, but in terms of national security, the situation, obviously, seriously, was not good. Efforts to disarm the Highlands in the wake of the 15 had proved so ineffective that the pro-Jacobite clans were now better equipped for rebellion than ever before. So this is not what they want to hear. Mm-hmm. Wade's report of 1724 recommended a programme of reforms to redress the situation, and these included building new barracks, repairing existing fortresses, and he wanted to establish companies of loyal Highlanders who could keep the peace overall. These proposals gained Wade the post of commander of the forces in North Britain, an appointment he held until 1740. So we're talking about a good chunk of his career here. On his way north in 1725, he actually did have to deal with disturbances, Jacobite disturbances in Glasgow, which he did so quite well. And he carried on to begin to implement his measures for control. Now, Wade's major improvements included the construction of a road stretching about 60 miles, I think, from Inverness up beyond Fort William, and this was right through the heart of the Highlands, and he believed that further military ways would give them the really important links with the troops in the Lowlands and so discouraging future uprisings.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking road building in the 1720s, mm-hmm. and that can't be easy work, surely. So how did that get carried out then?
Well, it's not a fun job. Wade used soldiers called his highwaymen, I like that, and they were paid double for the labour they supplied, and they were ordered to build roads to a particular standard. They were digging out big pieces, digging out the roads, digging out the foundations, really, until they reached a good base of rock. And they piled up this material on either side, which helped to create drainage. And then they would fill in the hollow with large stones and smaller stones and gravel so that they had a good road base. And this was hugely successful. But it wasn't always possible to maintain the standard, as they had to work with materials close to hand. They don't want to move gravel and stone in from great distances. So Wade's road-making programme really was a remarkable feat of civil engineering.
So this had the effect of helping sort of control the Highlands then, and he's doing this like from when, 1720s? Did that really help at all?
Well, that's actually the problem. I mean, this was done to control the Highlands, but the general's great roads merely supported the movements of the Jacobites by the time of Bonnie Prince Charlie's campaign in 1745-1746. So they just used the roads to get around to get around faster.
So what happened to Wade next? Was he involved in the 45?
Well, Wade was part of the military committee who were working on a response to the Jacobite crisis at that time. I mean, the country's in uproar, Charlie's arrived, all that kind of thing. And he was to go north with troops, but he went to Newcastle. Charlie's obviously arrived in Scotland by this time and he's raising people up there and all the rest of it. So Wade goes north, but he goes to Newcastle, assuming that they'd come that way. Of course, the Jacobites went for Carlisle. Wade was too slow, apparently, to leave Newcastle to counter them, and he only got so far before hearing that Carlisle had fallen. And then, thinking that the Jacobites would not advance any further into England, he went back to Newcastle, and of course the Jacobites did move on. It was the Duke of Cumberland who was then ordered to face the Jacobites and deal with the uprising. By this time, of course, though, Wade's an older man by this time. He's 72. It doesn't sound old, but in those days, you know, and he's not in the best of health. So it might be understandable that he was kind of lacking in energy and maybe not as quite as dynamic as a leader. But he comes in at that point for some really harsh criticism. I think Cumberland refers to him as Grandmother Wade or something. Yeah, it's pretty horrible. But historians actually remind us that he was quite unfortunate to be pitched against the amazing Lord George Murray, who was tactically brilliant. There's a wonderful quote about Bonnie Prince Charlie, which said that if he, the prince, had slept during the whole of the expedition and allowed Lord George Murray to act for him according to his own judgment, he would have found the crown of Great Britain on his head when he awoke. So that's what people thought of Lord George Murray at the time. If he'd just taken over and done it, he would have got the job done. So that's who Wade's up against. So it's not really surprising that things don't go very well for him at that point.
Yeah, so if Wade's not really doing much good during the actual campaign, so where does his legacy really come into Jacobite history? Was it because of the roads?
Well, it's not just the roads. Sorry, I think I'm underselling him here, actually. By the time Wade completed his time in Scotland, now we're talking from 1725 up to around 1740, he was personally responsible for building 250 miles of road and around 28 bridges. Personally, there's another chap comes after him called Caulfield. There's more bridges. And he is actually responsible for beginning at least the most amazing bridge here in Perthshire at Aberfeldy. There's a stunning five-span showpiece, really, over the Tay, and it's often called Wade's Bridge. And this really brings me back to why I wanted to talk about him today, really, because this legacy is one that we can all discover for ourselves in the great outdoors. It's possible when you're out walking in various glens and locations that you might just be walking on a road built by Wade. In Glenshee or the Small Glen, you can look up books, you can search for images and things, but actually when you're out walking yourself, if you're on a roadway that seems quite nice but it's slightly remote, I would say there's probably a good chance you could be on Wade's roads. And there's lots of really good websites that you can look up to help you find your way to the places where the bridges remain and the roads are actually really quite visible. The National Library of Scotland has a map website and features surveys done at the time. Roy's military survey is one map, and Wade is also listed on their website because there was various surveys and maps attributed to his work. So that really helps you look at the historical context of where these places were.
So how else can people find out more about Wade, his roads and his bridges?
Well, it never hurts to visit your local library.
Oh, nicely done.
We've got lots of books and information about this work, and much of this pertains to local places. For example, we do have a lot of books written by local authors as well on places like Aberfeldy and Weem, which obviously where the bridges are. And these contain lots of great information, particular works as well. I'm thinking really of people like Colin Liddell. He wrote a book on the history of Pitlochry, and he refers continually to the work of Wade. Liddell really addresses the impact of Wade on Pitlochry in particular. So you can see, you could do that in other places too, but actually he highlights how Wade's Great North Road really shaped the Highland Perthshire area we recognise today. He really explains the way Pitlochry and Moulin were shaped at that time. Moulin is, you know, just outside Pitlochry. Mm-hmm. It was at one point the main part of the town, and Pitlochry was lesser, and it's the way the roads came that shaped all of that. So it's really interesting how things developed. There's a lot of expertise out there, and some other good websites, such as Heritage Roads and Old Military Roads of Scotland. Old Roads of Scotland is another good website. It seems to give quite useful information to build on. Perth and Kinross Heritage Trust also published a map which leads you to roads and bridges, and this also features places of interest like Wade's Hut, which is the house he lived in while he was at Weem overseeing the bridge at Aberfeldy being built. So as well as the roads and bridges, there are buildings to see too.
Well, that's pretty good. And all of this came around basically because of the Jacobite uprisings then.
Yeah, pretty much. It's an important infrastructure which was created in response to concerns about the wild and unruly Highlands. And this part of the story plays its part in understanding events and the wider legacy for Scotland, which had its beginnings in the crushing of the clans after Culloden. Wade is famous for this aspect of our heritage. Amazing, really, for a man who started out as a soldier. It was his recognition that Scotland was impracticable for the want of roads and bridges, and his determination and hard work to change that, that had a huge impact on the way the country developed thereafter. It's quite an extraordinary legacy, and one we can still see about us if we just know where to look.
Mm-hmm. I mean, today I didn't expect to be talking about roads and bridges and legacy stuff like that. Cool. So thank you very much, Nicola. So for those of you who have continued to listen to us as we've been going on, we have one more podcast left to go before this series winds up. The Jacobite Clans exhibition is on until the 26th of October. And you can find out all the information on everything that Culture Perth and Kinross does, including the work in the library and the local and family history, on our website, which is www.culturepk.org.uk.